Chapter 19. Gingivere hacked away at the cell wall. Immediately the guards had gone, he set about trying to communicate with the prisoners on either side of him. From the damp mortar between the stones of his cell, he had prized loose a spike that had a ring attached to it for securing unruly prisoners. Armed with the spike, the wildcat selected a damp patch on one adjoining cell wall and worked furiously at the mortar around a stone which was not quite so big as the others, forming the barrier. Soon he had it loose. Digging and jiggling, he pulled and pushed alternately until the rock slid out, aided by a shove from the prisoner on the other side. A small wet snout poked through.
"Hello, Cogs. It's me, Ferdy."
Gingivere smiled, glad to hear the sound of a friendly voice. He patted the snout encouragingly.
"Sorry, old fellow. It's not Cogs. I'm Gingivere, a friend. Cogs is in the cell on the other side of me. You stay quiet, and I'll see if I can get through to him."
"Thank you, Mr. Gingivere. Are you a wildcat?"
"Yes, I am. But no need to worry. I won't harm you. Hush now, little one. Let me get on with my work."
Ferdy stayed silent, peering through the hole at Gingivere, who was hacking stolidly at the opposite wall. It took a long time. Gingivere's paws were sore through grappling with the stone, chipping the mortar, and pulling this way and that, until the rock finally gave and shifted. With Gingivere pulling from one side and Cogs pushing from the other, the wall stone plopped out onto the floor.
"Hello, Mr. Gingivere. I'm Cogs. Is Ferdy there?"
The wildcat shook the paw which protruded from the hole.
"Yes, Cogs. If you look, you'll see him through the hole from his cell."
The two little hedgehogs looked through at each other.
"Hi, Cogs."
"Hi, Ferdy."
"The guards will be coming shortly with bread and water for me,"
Gingivere interrupted.
"I'll share it with you. Go back into your cells now and stay quiet. When Chib arrives tomorrow, I'll let him know you two are here."
Gingivere replaced the stones without much difficulty. He sat awaiting the guards with his daily ration of bread and water, realising for the first time in a long and unhappy period that he was able to smile again.
Questing, oh, the friends did go, companions brave and bold, o'er forest, field and flowing stream, cross mountains high and old. These brave young creatures journeying along the road together, wild birds did sing throughout the spring into the summer weather.
"Gonth, will you stop prancing about and caterwauling while we're trying to solve this chart? Dinny, chuck something at that fat little nuisance, will you please?"
Martin scratched his head as he and Bella turned back to the scroll. Young Dinny obliged by hurling an armchair cushion that knocked the mouse thief flat upon his bottom.
"There, that'll keep ye silent a piece, Sir Gonfin. You'm a right little noise bag. Stand on my tongue, you mar."
Gonf lay on the floor, resting his head upon the cushion. He hummed snatches of further new verses he was planning. Martin and Bella pored over the writing on the scroll, gleaning the information and writing it upon a chart with a quill pen. The wording was in ancient badger script that only Bella could translate. Young Dinny called out from Bella's armchair where he was ensconced.
"What we gotten so far, Martin?"
Martin read aloud.
"Given to Lady Sable Brock by Olaf Skyfurrow, the wild goose. After she found him injured in Mossflower and tended his hurts, the beacon that my skein finds its way to the sea by is called the Strange Mountain of Fire Lizard."
Here Martin had marked the star with the word thus. Salamandastrum.
"We of the free sky do wing our way there, but if you be an earth walker, it will be a long hard journey. Here is the way I will tell you to go. I begin as I fly over Brock Hall. Twixt earth and sky, where birds can fly, I look below to see a place of wood with plumage green that breezes move like sea. Behind me, as the dawn breaks clear, wood pigeons come awake. See brown dust roll twixt green and gold, unwinding like a snake. So fly and sing, the wild goose's king. O'er golden acres far below, our wings beat strong and true. Where deep and wet, see flowing yet another snake of blue. Across the earth is changing shape, with form and colour deep. Afar the teeth of land rise up, to bite the wool of sheep. So fly and sing, the wild goose's king. Beyond this, much is lost and missed. But here and there I see, the treachery of Muddy Grey. 'Tis no place for the free. O feathered brethren of the air, fly straight and do not fall. Onward cross the wet gold flat, where sea birds wheel and call. So fly and sing, the wild goose is king. The skies are growing darker, see our beacons shining bright. Go high across the single fang that burns into the night. We leave you now as we wing on, our journey then must be, where sky and water meet in line, and suns drown in the sea. So fly and sing, the wild goose is king.
Gonf came across and stared at the scroll.
Well, old what's-his-name Skyfurrow was nearly as good a bard as me. Bet he wasn't half as clever a thief, though, matey.
Martin shook his head.
It's certainly a strange route to follow, given in goose song, written in ancient badger and translated into common woodland. Do you think we've missed anything, Bella?
The badger looked indignant.
Certainly not. It's all there, word for word. I'll have you know that female badgers are great scholars. Though I must say it all looks very cryptic to me.
Young Dinny clambered out of the armchair and squinted at Martin's neat writing.
Triptych? What be that? Stand on my tunnel, it'd be worse than making holes in water, over.
Gonf stifled a giggle.
You certainly have a way with words, Din. Ah, well, let's get our thinking caps on and imagine we're all sky for us.
Martin clicked his paws together.
Right, that's exactly what we have to do. Imagine the ground from up above, as if we were birds.
Sarmina stood watching the dawn break over Mossflower from her chamber window. Mist rose in wisps from the treetops as the sun climbed higher in a pale blue cloudless sky. The Wildcat Queen was highly pleased with their latest plan. The woodlanders must have realised the two baby hedgehogs were missing, and they would send out search parties. Sarmina detailed Clud and another weasel named Scratch, acting as his deputy, to patrol the woods along with a picked group of 20 or so. They would travel light, unhampered by the usual Katir armour. They could act as a guerrilla force, lying in wait to capture any woodlanders they came across and sabotaging resistance wherever they encountered it. She watched them slip out of the perimeter gate, armed with their choice of weapons and equipped with rations. The Wildcat Queen curled her lip in satisfaction. There was no need to try interrogating her two prisoners further at the moment. Let them stay in their cells until they were starving. It was always easier to interview creatures who had not eaten for a few days. Two small hedgehogs trying to pit their wits against the Queen of the Thousand Eyes. What chance did they have? Scratch was a fairly observant weasel. He jabbed skyward with his dagger.
See that robin, Clud?
Clud noted that Scratch had omitted to call him captain. He looked up, but Chib had flown from view.
What robin? Where?
Scratch sheathed his dagger.
You've missed him, though. I could have sworn it was the same bird I've noticed hanging about outside the barracks a few times. Always ends up somewhere near the ground, hidden.
Clud was reluctant to believe that Scratch was more alert than he.
It might be summit or nothing. Woodlanders don't usually have much to do with birds. Still, we'd best be on the safe side. Oi, Thicktail, make your way back to Katir and tell my lady about that robin. Don't breathe a word to anyone else, though. I don't want Ashleg or that fox stealing any of my credit.
Thicktail saluted and jogged off in the direction of Katir. Scratch looked at the thickly wooded area they were in.
Perhaps we'd better lie low here a while. That way we can have a rest while we keep our eyes and ears open, eh, Clud?
Clud knew the idea was a sensible one, but Scratch was beginning to annoy him with his insubordinate manner.
Aye, I was just thinking the same thing myself. Right, lads, pick good hiding places and keep your eyes and ears open. But just let me catch anyone snoozing and I'll have his tail for a bootlace. That goes double for you, Scratch.
As the special patrol dispersed among the trees, Scratch stuck out his tongue at Clud's back, muttering beneath his breath.
Clud the Clod, thick as mud.
Thicktail did not like being out in Mossflower alone, even in broad sunny daylight. The stoat scurried through the trees, looking furtively from left to right as he went. He repeated Clud's instructions aloud to himself.
Tell the Queen that there's been a robin redbreast hanging about Katir grounds. It flies down low and vanishes near the floor. Clud thinks that it might be something to do with those woodlanders. Now I'm to say nothing to Fortunata or Ashleg. If they ask me, I'll just tell them that I had to come back because I sprained my paw. I'd better practice limping on it just in case.
Hargulor was making a wide sweep from Katir over the forest. This way he could fool anyone at Katir into thinking he had flown away. He was about to circle back when he heard the voice below him and saw a stoat limping about in the undergrowth.
I must tell the Queen that a robin has seen Clud hanging about... No, that's not right. I must tell the robin that Clud has been hanging the Queen.
Hargulor did not require perfect sight to tell him where his next noisy meal was. He dropped like a stone to the forest below, a stone with talons and a curving beak. Bella's study was still awash in a litter of old documents. They slid from the desk, which still had its secret drawer hanging askew. Several food trays stood balanced here and there amid the dust. The scroll and four leaves that had led the friends to the roof lay on the arm of the big armchair, where Dinny sat snuggled in its deep cushioned seat. Bella leaned against the desk. She did not mind the young mole borrowing her favourite chair, though he did seem to be growing rather fond of it. Martin paced up and down. At each turn he had to step over Gomph. The little mouse thief lay stretched out on a worn carpet that covered the study floor. Martin was having trouble imagining himself as a bird. The mere mention of heights made the ground-loving young Dinny feel sick and dizzy. Gomph, however, was displaying a fine aptitude for a mouse bird.
Ha! I look below to see a place of wood with plumage green that breezes move like sea. It's as plain as the whiskers on your face, mateys. He means good old Mossflower Woods, right where we are.
Bella closed her eyes, picturing herself in flight.
I suppose that our woods would look like water moving in the wind from above. Carry on, Gomph. What's next?
Behind me as the dawn breaks clear, wood pigeons come awake.
Brr, don't you unsee? Dawnbreak, sunrise. Goosebird be a-telling us'ns to traverse westerly.
Young Dinny called out from the armchair. Martin shook Dinny's paw.
Good mole. Of course, if the sun rises in the east and dawnbreak is behind him, then he must be travelling due west. Well solved, young Dinny.
The mole gave a huge grin, settling deeper into the armchair.
Oh, this year young mole ain't only a digger. I see they woodpigger waking at dornin'. Grr, terrible noise bags they be, all that cooing. Go on, what's next bit of poetry?
Gomph continued.
The poetry says, see brown dust roll twixt green and gold, unwinding like a snake.
Bella nodded knowingly.
Aha! Friend Olaf gave me an easy one there. I know the very place. Between the woods and the flatland south of Katir, the road has a twist in it. I've walked down it many times, and thought it was just like a snake trying to slough its skin.
Gomph shuddered at the mention of snake.
So, mateys, we walk through the woods, heading west, and cross the path below Katir. Then there's only one way we can go, straight out across the flatlands and the open plains, like the poem says, or the golden acres to where the snake of blue lies. Ugh, snakes!
That's no snake, Gomph.
Martin interrupted.
It's the same as Bella's winding road, but this one is blue. It's a river. What puzzles me is the teeth of land eating the wool of sheep line.
Bella stretched and yawned.
Ooh, I think we must be going stale sitting around this dusty old room. Sheep and land, wool and teeth. Oh, well, maybe we can't see the wood for the trees. But whatever it is, you'll know it when you see it. What do you want to do? Sit here half a season solving riddles, or follow the clues you already have and work the rest out as you go along? The supplies are packed and ready. You have your weapons, wits and youth to help you along. What more do you want?
Gomph supplied the answer.
A good matey to walk by your side through thick and thin.
Yuns bain't leaving this year mole behind.
Martin and Gomph laughed heartily. Bella bowed apologetically to the mole.
Forgive me, Dinny. I did not know you wished to go questing.
The young mole heaved himself up onto his hind paws.
Brr, you try and stop, oi, Miss Bell. Though I do hate to take leave of yon armchair.